This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick a League Podcast, episode 556, brought to you by Bombas. For the most comfortable socks you will ever wear, visit getbombas.com/iFanboy and save 20% off your first order of four or more pairs, plus free shipping. Do you know what I think about you? Do you know what I feel is true? Do you know what I think about her? I know she thinks about me, I'm sure. I don't know why. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick a League Podcast, episode 556. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Sup?
And Ron Richards.
Hello.
And we are iFanboy, and we like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book, called it the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book, some other books. We got a lot of books to talk about this week. A lot of number one books this week.
So many
that maybe, books. You've maybe all we're talking about.
You've understated, is what you've just done there.
Maybe no listener mail, maybe nothing else. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
It's funny because I always see, oh, New York Comic Con's coming up or San Diego's coming up. And I was like, oh, that's fine. You know. And then the books for the week hit me and I go, oh.
No, it's right. But it's never been like this. This was, and we'll talk about it more.
We'll get to that when we get to the segment.
This was downright weird. This was, yeah, so.
And I feel like I need to emphasize this section again. Here's your spoiler warning.
Oh, that's great.
This is a review show. If you haven't read a book we're about to talk about, skip that part.
We go to a lot of effort to put the exact times of when that happens.
Yes.
I can stop doing that if you're not paying attention. I would totally stop doing that.
For those of you who are new listeners, open up whatever podcast app you're listening to on this. Click on this episode. You see full show notes with time codes. We spend lots of time doing that. We also list the song and the artist used in the opening and the close. So if you like the music, you can check it there. That's also on ifanboy.com. So I'm sorry.
Just while we're at it, the music is also listed in those two locations.
Yeah, that's what I said.
It has been for some time.
Yep. So
anyway, spoilers coming. So if you haven't read a book we got to talk about, pause the show or skip that bit.
Also, the music is listed there. I just want to make sure people
this
know
week,
where the music is listed.
This week, Ron had the pick.
I did, and it was bound to happen sooner or later. But the pick of the week goes to The Flintstones, number 4, written by Mark Russell and with art by Steve Poo. And
I don't think is that right? Poo?
How else do you P-U-G-H? Pug?
Pew.
I don't mean poo. I mean, come on, he's a good artist. Actually, this is some of the best work I've seen him do. Like, it's really, really good.
Oh, actually, the P is silent. It's Ugg.
Pug. Okay, there you go.
It's pronounced.
So I had already deemed this the pick of the week, and then I checked social media, and I got to tip my hat to Josh for really summing up one of the reasons why it's pick of the week with his tweet from Wednesday, which was, the Flintstones right now is the most subversive comic book on the market.
I said it was the most intelligent and subversive mainstream comic book being published.
Absolutely.
And and that was written concurrently. I think that your email said it was the Big of the Week right after that, which, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I want to give you credit for that observation, but that did not influence my pick.
I will. I want to give you credit because I would have never looked at this in a million years if you hadn't told me to, and I still don't know why you read it in the first place.
I was
reading all those.
You were.
All those Hanna-Barbera.
I was explaining this at dinner last night, and I was explaining to my girlfriend how, you know, Warner Brothers owns these Hanna-Barbera licenses or title or properties, and every couple of years they need to do something with them to protect the copyright, which is what I assume this whole wave is what was. Or maybe it was just the fact that someone at Warner Brothers was like, hey, we've got all these Hanna-Barbera properties. Let's do something with them. Give them to the comics people. Now, I'm speculating, but my guess is that, you know, they get the email from Warner Brothers saying, we'd like you to use Hanna-Barbera. And someone at DC was like, well, we could just do run-of-the-mill Archie-style comics with these characters, or we could do something different with them. And what started this was the maligned that we made fun of, the hipster Shaggy and emoji Scooby-Doo, and then you got the Mad Max wannabe Wacky Raceland, which was just awful. And so, like, after reading those first two, I was like, well, I want to see how bad this can get.
You were going deep. And
I was going deep. Yeah, listen, I'm gonna do it. I'm going in. And so I started reading the Flintstones, not looking at the creative team or putting together the fact that Mark Russell is the writer of Prez, which was the series last year that we loved.
Yeah.
That was amazing. That was political commentary and satire and all that sort of stuff. And knowing that the writer of that Prez series is writing the Flintstones makes this make much more sense, in that this incarnation of the Flintstones is a subversive satire of our world, similar to how the original Flintstones was, but in a much more
pointed
progressive way right now, then I would say. And each issue has been a one and done issue. There have been a couple of, you know, minor plot threads that go throughout it, you know, like the Fred and Barney being veterans and dealing with post-war stress, and also the adoption of Dino as their pet. But each issue, for the most part, has been one and done, dealing with a singular topic. And this topic is a thinly veiled story about gay marriage,
sort of marriage in general, but gay marriage becomes the flashpoint. Yes.
Well, yeah. Well, no. But the idea being that you, there's no way to read this without applying what's going on in our world today. And so, what the twist?
You're right.
Yeah. So what the twist on this story by Mark Russell is that in the world of Bedrock and in the cavemen and all stuff like that, the normal is not, they're non-monogamous. In fact, apparently there's a place called the Sex Cave. You just go to have sex with people, but everybody lives independently, and monogamy is not the mainstream popularized approach to living. And so therefore, Fred and Wilma, who are married, are very much outsiders. And they go to a retreat kind of a getaway with other married couples to talk about it. And you get a great little kind of picture. There's an old couple that's been married for years, and you get they kind of hate each other. You know, then there's a young couple who's together but questioning, why do I need to get married and all that sort of thing. While this is happening in the town, the townspeople are rallying around hating people who get married and saying that it's wrong, and they decide to go protest this marriage retreat. And you get, you know, picket signs say marriage is unnatural, one man plus one woman equals two weird, God hates dads.
God hates dads. I mean, that's so good. That's so good. But for me, the moment was, and I actually read these, like, I had them piled up because I was supposed to read them before and I didn't, and I actually just started reading them, and I realized it was a new one this week. I don't even think I read them in order. I think I read four first, which didn't matter, which is important for people listening, like, read them in
order.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at all.
But when Adam and Steve showed up, I was like, that's very funny. That's actually Adam and Steve, and, you know, given the his prehistoric context of all the stuff, it's just... It was a lot of that. It was the same kind of thing like when we used to watch we used to read Chew, like, back in the early days before we got really used to it. Like, there was that kind of stuff going on all in the background. This is the same thing, but it's even, like, hyper-level satire on top of it, which was happening in Prez, too. It's definitely...
It's very similar in tone to Prez, where it's just a different setting. But the tone is... I mean, I read all four of these this week, too, because once you made the pick, I was like, oh, I guess I got to read this now. And it's very good, and the tone is... It's almost shocking what's happening with these books, that this book exists like this at all, that this the Flintstones are being used as a vehicle to criticize capitalism in the first issue, religion and consumerism, and now the gay marriage controversy. And it's sort of shocking. I kind of wonder if people in charge know this is happening. But that's what
I gotta understand. I mean, and hats off to the team, the creative team behind it, and the editors doing it and all stuff like that. But like, does everyone know this is happening? And like, if they don't tell them, because I want it to keep on going. Because this is, I mean, it's downright like I keep going back to that word you used, Josh. It's subversive.
Yeah.
You know, which is great. Which is I love it, because I feel like this is the kind of thing that comics has a history of doing, you know, going back to the 60s and 70s, you know, comics with an X, you know, kind of alternative comics to be pointing out the absurdity and the ridiculous. And admittedly, I know, I'm a liberal from the Northeast, and if anybody doesn't agree with me or us, then I'm sorry. But like,
I'm not.
I know. but this is the kind of thing that I think is severely lacking in today's world of comics. And to see this coming from DC Comics under the guise of the Flintstones is just fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
And I also feel like
it is related to, like, we think of the cartoons as cartoons, but the Flintstones was a primetime show.
Yes.
And so there is also a history of a context for this being, you know, it wasn't just for kids. We saw them in the afternoons on reruns, but it wasn't that. There was a subversive satire going on of, you know, the family life of the 50s and 60s. So,
yeah,
that it's not that far out when you think of it this way. This actually reminds me of, in a completely different context, but this is like when G.I. Joe Cobra was coming out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we were just like, actually, even the original G.I. Joe comic book, to a certain extent, that they'd taken this sort of property and...
Oh, yeah. I mean, the original, it was all about the fallout, the psychological fallout from Vietnam.
I mean,
you go back and read those early issues now before it got super crazy. It was all about trauma from Vietnam, and this is very similar.
But at the same time, though, like, when you look at this... I don't think you can read this and go, oh, that's not the Flintstones, because it kind of still is the Flintstones.
It totally still is the Flintstones. And like,
right. Barney's dumb as a rock. And
yeah,
that's really pretty. And I mean, it's all
Bam
the same.
Bam Strong.
I liked Pebbles' t-shirt for Nick Caveman.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
there's a lot of great puns. And then the very, very minor B plot is that while the Flintstones are away at the marriage retreat, all of their appliances start talking to each other, and you get to see like when the people are away and real
and
kind of
sad. They're sad.
They're sad. Yeah. Like they, you know,
what's a friend.
Yeah, exactly. Just like this loneliness. Right?
Everyone there, please open the door. It's really
good.
I love Prez a lot. We loved it a lot. We talked about it a lot. It was pick of the week. But I don't know if it's because it's a familiar property or not, but I think this one hits a little harder.
Yeah.
And even Prez does.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
No.
He's using the
property of mainstream media. It's like a big property.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's kind of amazing.
So I just wanted, but making a pick of the week, this issue completely deserves it. Like I said earlier, I think it's some of the best Steve Puh art.
Pugh.
The best Steve Pugh art, all four issues consistently great. And
really
Mark Russell is not only writing funny stuff, witty stuff, but again, subversive and intelligent and really makes you think. And honestly, when this comes out in trade paperback, I'm thinking this is going to be a Christmas present. I mean, this is like, you got to read this because it's fantastic. So,
yeah.
Well, not for us, because we've read it.
Well, you know, yeah, but for somebody else, you know, So
if you read Prez, if you listen to the show and you read Prez, you should definitely be reading this. They didn't really publicize this was from the writer of Prez.
They didn't publicize this at all.
Like, I think they don't want anyone to know. They don't want Diane Nelson and her Batman t-shirt to know what's going on with this.
I know. I don't want, and I want it to continue. Like, I don't want anybody to like be aware of this or to ruin it. And like, you could take Wacky Raceland, you could take Scooby-Doo, you could take the even the other ones. I haven't read the newer ones that came out of the Flintstones, but Flintstones is just a gem in the rough. It is, it's fantastic.
So what a surprise.
Yeah, what a bravo! If yeah. Anyone working on this book at DC who's listening to this, and I know they don't listen, but keep it up. Whatever we can do to help, this book is awesome. So that's great.
Now, as great as this book was, I was very surprised that Superman number 8 wasn't pick of the week.
Yeah, I mean, it was Superman number 8 was great, and it hit on a lot of things, but it didn't. I mean, I'm sure you loved it, but I didn't love it. But
Josh.
You know, I'm a little in between. Like, the whole way through it, I'm saying I didn't know how to feel at the end.
Well, the thing is, don't even have the last page. I still think it continued on that feeling from the last issue that we loved so much at the county fair. I thought it was the same kind of, wow, this is really great. The Superman character is great. The stuff with the sun is really great. I love that they're sort of marooned on this weird, we're out of time world because of a science experiment. I mean, that's sort of a very old time comics. Even take out the very last page, and I thought this was a wonderful issue again. But I thought,
okay, well,
adding in the last page made it a very elegant tribute. I thought,
yeah, it was. That was what I thought. Is that so? I don't know. It's basically like this whole thing refers to Superman and his son get transported magically to the world, to the island that opens up the new frontier. Where Rick Flag is
the Dinosaur Island, basically.
Yeah, Rick Flag. Is it Rick Flag? No.
No, it was Captain Storm and Sarge Peterson and Gunnar Wilson.
Yeah, but who was the last one?
John Cloud.
Okay, yeah, right. Okay. You know, they all got killed. Basically. Yeah, the losers, and they all got killed, and the dinosaurs, and there was one guy left, and they didn't make it, and so he wrote, "This is the story of the losers on the wall." So it's a direct quotation from New Frontier, the first issue.
Right. Which, according to the handbook that came out last year, is one of the 52 Earths.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously now it definitely is.
Yep.
So someone was like, is it canon? I was like, well, now it kind of is, because it's one of the realities, and we don't know why they're transported or whatever. But you got to, and you know what's funny is that I didn't pick up on it.
I didn't either.
I read it early. I mean, I did, like, I was like, this is starting to seem familiar, and I think when we saw, you know, once we started to get into the cave, I was like, oh, this is that, and then that last page sort of hits me. And I guess I just didn't know what to think. I was like, is this good or bad? And then the more I thought about it afterwards, it was a loving tribute. Like, it was just to a great comic book. And I thought, yes, it is good. They should have done that. And I hadn't even thought about it the way that you said, Connor, but it definitely is, like, on its own. If you took that out, it's a father and son adventure with a dog and dinosaurs and superpowers.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good, too.
Yeah,
I think you take this issue and the last issue together and you give them to somebody who hasn't read Superman in a while, so this is what Superman's like right now, I think that they'd be really blown away. But continue, Ron. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I mean, I like the tone of it. It's definitely more in the direction of Superman that I'd like to see. I like the addition of Superboy. I like the kind of father-son kind of adventure.
It works really well.
Yeah, it totally does. The tie-in with the losers and the kind of revisiting Dinosaur Island was nice. It was nice, but it didn't. I mean, for me, it wasn't the home run that I think it was more for you, Connor. You know, just because I don't care as much about Superman and
you hate
all
Superman.
That stuff. I really do hate Superman. But then the last page with the dedication to Darwin Cook was a very, very nice tribute and a nice probably one of the classiest ways to tribute his passing that I think we've seen in comics yet. Like, do you know how to honor him best? Do a story that he would have liked. You know,
right.
and that's what they did. And so I definitely do applaud it. And listen, I got to tell you, I mean, Flintstones was great and this was great. And we're going to talk about a bunch more number one books that came out. It was very difficult to make a pick this week because it was a great week.
Three weeks in a row where it's been fantastic comic.
I don't want to name Doug Monkey here for his amazing work with dinosaurs.
Yeah. I mean, well, he's already, we know how great he is.
I know, but the dinosaurs, the dog, the way that the fights look in the air, like, it's wonderful cartooning. It's great stuff.
Yeah.
And this doesn't change the fact that I don't think Superman should be a dad, but if he's going to be a dad, at least tell good stories, and I think they're doing that so far.
And honestly, I'm more intrigued by the kid now than anything. If he's going to be Superboy, that's a blast. That's a big, and we're going to talk about this later in the show as well, too, but I'll introduce this theme, is that we're at a point now in comics where comics creators and the publishers are wrestling with you know, the same characters that we've been seeing for the past 70 years with ushering a new era of comics and characters and things like that. And some work and some don't work. Damian, for example, you know, and Nova, for an example, on the other side of things. And, you know, and so that's a tricky balance beam to walk across. And I think that in this particular case with Superman and the Sun, like, I don't like Superman, but I'm intrigued by this because it opens doors to whole different types of stories, to a new kind of character that I want to get to know, and adventures like this.
Well, look at it this way. For a long time now, they have had a really hard time selling Superman stories the way that, you know, we think they should be, you know, right. And by introducing this character who is his actual son, a lot of times that drags the character down, say, like it would in the case of a Spider-Man.
Yep.
But with this, I think that people, writers, everybody was having a hard time figuring out where...
Superman? With a younger...
No, but Superman? Like what it was that was tying this... It was like his love for his parents was kind of the thing... For his adopted parents was kind of the thing that was tying him to Earth. But now he has a stake in it, more so. Yep. And it... humanizes, I was trying to see if that's the word I want to say, but I'm going to go with it, humanizes him just a little bit more, where he has a fear now that he didn't have before.
Right.
He's afraid for his son, so he's got a reason to keep everything safe. And before, he was a little, maybe a little too godlike, and this humanizes him a bit. That doesn't seem to work the same way with Batman.
Well, it's interesting because Superman was always kind of the dad of the DC universe anyway. Yeah. So that the vibe isn't that different. And I was about to say it doesn't work that way with Batman, but he also was, because he always had his flock of kids running around.
But he doesn't seem to be... They never played Batman up for the fear that they were going to get hurt. What they're doing with Clark Kent here. Or at least he doesn't emote it in the same way. Superman,
well, he's not
here,
in touch with his emotions, obviously.
Right, but Superman here is like outwardly concerned about his son. It's like a big part of this story that's been going on. And it works really well.
Of all the sons to not be so concerned about, though.
I know, but it doesn't matter. If you're a dad, like, maybe that's just why it works for me. But, if you're a dad, you're concerned, even though you know they're perfectly capable.
And indestructible.
And he has great... I know. And hell of a dog.
The dog stuff has been great, and I'm glad we're back to classic Crypto as opposed to that weird wolf Crypto that they were trying to make us eat earlier. But switching to the complete other side of the spectrum, Ron... This was a sexy, sexy Green Arrow number 8.
All I got to say is Green Arrow, when drawn by Otto Schmidt, is one of the hottest books on the shelves.
Yes.
And when Otto Schmidt is not drawing it, it becomes one of the most frustrating books on the shelves.
It becomes very pedestrian when he's not drawing it.
I keep quitting and then coming back.
This is a great example purely for the 4 or 5 pages of Ollie and Dinah on the beach. Like... wow. You know, and I think, and it's important to note that Otto Schmidt colors this as well as draws it.
Yeah.
And I think having just the total control over the page and the imagery, I mean, that full page shot of them in the water, like, geez, wow. Like,
well, I'll be honest. And when, you know, I started to read it, and, you know, Ollie was on the island and he's being attacked by a bear. And then, you turn the page and it's the full page shot of Dinah. And she says, "I'll be your bright side." I went, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, there's something about it. It's they're a very sexy couple.
Yeah,
and even this weird version of them, and I still don't really love this version of Black Canary, but even whatever it is, these two characters have it.
Yep,
and it works.
And not even just the sexy pages in the beginning, but the entire issue.
Yeah.
I mean, this book crackles with energy when Otto Schmidt is on it that isn't present otherwise, and. I'm be really curious, and this is why I don't like the double shipping and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Because I haven't loved Ben Piercy's story with the sister and the double cross and the triple, and all the stuff like that. But had Otto Schmidt been drawing all of it, I wonder if I would have liked it more.
I wonder if wouldn't we like this issue because this issue doesn't deal with all that stuff.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it made me wonder that had he been drawing that entire arc, would it have been a easier pill to swallow?
So I have a question, because I don't know if I missed an issue or not, or I just wasn't paying attention in the last one. Now, I remember him ending up on the island. He's like, "Oh, no, I'm back on the island." So then when she showed up, I thought it was a hallucination at first.
Yeah, me too.
How'd she get there? Is there any explanation for that?
Not that I caught.
That's weird. And then he's not even suspicious of it. That was the other reason that made me think it was an hallucination.
Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't miss something, but that wasn't...
No, you didn't. No.
Okay.
You're also, it still could be a hallucination.
It went on a long time, and it didn't seem like it. And also, there was character development that took place between them.
Yeah.
So that would be a waste, I think.
Yeah.
But I hope that's not the case.
I think, Ron, this book needs to be monthly.
Yep.
That applies to a lot of things.
But yep. For sure this one. I mean, this is one of, there's a handful of books. I think Flash is the same way, that primary artist is so good that they need to only have them draw it.
You know what? I would even it's not even good. It's appropriate. And like, I think
it's good.
No, it is good, but that's not even, it's like this guy's better than this guy. It's that this guy's a better fit than this other guy. And what happens, what DC's doing is they're not acknowledging the fact that the artist, the consistency in the artist matters to the overall book.
And Marvel's doing the same thing. I mean, let's not paint DC completely alone in this.
Well,
I mean, they both are doing it. They are sacrificing the continuity of art style in favor of shipping frequency.
Which is an overall judgment on the value of the comic book, is that the art does not matter as much as the story.
Now, I have resolved the fact that that's comics now.
Yeah, like
that's mainstream comics now. Yeah, but I don't like it. I mean, but like I was having a conversation with somebody.
I'm not blaming you.
No, I know. I was saying I was having a conversation with a writer over at Marvel, and said how, you know, like I'm coming to terms with the fact that the way the comics that we knew, that we grew up with the writer and artist on a run and that sort of thing, is not the way they're done anymore. And he's like, I absolutely agree with you. He's like, I don't like it either. I would much rather collaborate with somebody over a long period of time, but they're choosing shipping frequency over consistency of creative team, which I think honestly is an insult to the artist, because I think it devalues what they're doing.
That's what I'm getting. But also at the same time, the other thing, you know, it wasn't moving units. And this does, and ultimately, I can't fault them for that, but it sucks.
It's only moving units because they're offering more units.
I know, but they couldn't.
You know,
but the thing is, just having a good comic doesn't move units. Is the sort of part that sucks.
That's what's
the only thing move units is offering the units. Like if they offered all these books weekly, it would severely damage the creativity, but it would sell more comics. It's just because people buy it.
Yeah. So.
Oh God! Did I just put that out there in the universe?
Oh God, I think he did, but Otto Schmidt, man, is the shit. He is great.
Yeah, I was so happy when I saw his name in the cover.
He's the Schmidt.
Yeah, he's the Schmidt.
He's the Schmidt.
So. All right. Well, so before we get to the parade of number ones, we want to thank our sponsor for this episode of iFanboy. And this episode is brought to you by Bombas. You probably never heard of Bombas, but you should take notice, because Bombas are socks that are engineered and designed to look, feel, and perform better. Bombas are all about comfort. And I can speak from experience. I was introduced to Bombas about a month ago. I bought a pair of socks to try them out, and I'm completely hooked and on board. In fact, I'm wearing a pair right now. The reason why is because they're made with this, I don't know, well, they told us it's a long staple Pima cotton, but it's incredibly soft and breathable. It's like very, very comfortable. I got a pair of the ankle socks, which is new to me. If you, Josh and Connor, you know me, I like my white.
Wow, wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah.
A little boy's all grown up.
So I picked up a pair of the ankle socks to try them out. And these things are made like no other sock I've ever seen before. First off, in the middle section, they've got this like honeycomb stitching pattern that they call the honeycomb support system, which gives better support in the arch and actually helps to keep the sock from sliding down. They've got a individually Y-stitched heel that just fits the heel perfectly. And then what's great with the ankle socks is that there's a little thicker blister tab up along the top that stops from any sort of blisters or rubbing or chafing. Or my problem with ankle socks has been they fall down and fall under my heel, and then I get a bunched up sock. You know, I hate that feeling. I've been wearing Bombas for about a month. That has not happened once, which I think is really amazing.
I got to say, I don't think I've ever heard you be passionate about socks, and I feel like this is a little authentic too, and it's weird for me.
It's good. They're great.
Also,
so,
you pronounced Pima cotton correctly, which, you know, given your track record, bravo.
So they've got ankle socks. They've also got calf socks that have got great tension and elasticity that stay up. They're not too tight. They don't slip down. And they've got a 100% happiness guarantee. They say you'll love your Bomba socks or you'll get your money back. But here's the thing. They're not only one of the most comfortable socks I've ever worn, but I feel pretty good about buying them, because for every pair that you purchase from Bombas, Bombas donates a pair to those in need. Socks are actually the most requested item in homeless shelters. And to date, Bombas has donated almost 1 million pairs of socks to folks who need them, which is great. So when you buy a pair of socks, they donate a pair of socks. So you do something good in return. That's why we're happy to have them helping out iFanboy. So go to getbombas.com/iFanboy. That's GETBOMBAS.com/iFanboy. And we'll have a link on the show notes of on the website. You can link to it. And if you go there, you'll get 20% off your first purchase off 4 or more pairs, plus free shipping. If you don't like them, they 100% happiness guarantee. They say you'll love them or you get your money back. So go to getbombas.com/iFanboy, and we thank them for their support.
He's a big bombas general.
All right. So as we mentioned earlier, a unnatural amount of number ones came out this week. Like, it was, I mean, honestly, it was, I mean, and we're talking about how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We're going to talk about 9 of them now, and there's ones that didn't make the cut. Like, we're not even talking about Shade the Changing Girl or Midnight or Apollo or any of those things. Like, there were so many number ones this week. But all right, so but the first one, you guys are going to make fun of me, but Enchanted Tiki Room number one from Marvel.
I kind of knew you were going to read this.
Yeah, it's not surprising, but also get on with it.
How close this came to being pick of the week, I can't even tell you. This is another book in the Marvel's been doing some Kingdoms books, which are books that tie into Disney World and Disneyland and the Magic Kingdom. They've done the Haunted Mansion. They've done they've done other ones. I haven't been reading them. I'm a big Disney fan. I'm a bigger fan of the Tiki Room. This was delightful. This was wonderful. It was basically they've created an island, which is they're basically mirroring Fantasy Island, where people come to the Tiki Island to see the Tiki birds. And it was just a fun little romp in the world of the Enchanted Tiki Room at Disneyland. So great. Horatio Dominguez did the art, good cartooning. You know, like, and if you're not a Disney fan, I don't see anybody else being interested in it. But it's not as subversive as the Flintstones. But I like the couple pages in. I'm like, oh, it's Fantasy Island. Okay, cool. And then I got excited and I had fun with it. So, and that's the most important thing. I had fun with it. So.
All right. Cage number one from Jendy Tartakovsky, who is a big animation guy. This was weird. Like, I enjoyed it. I like his art style. He's got a very unique art style. And I enjoyed the story, but in light of like Power Man and Iron Fist and the Cage Luke Cage TV show, I mean, this was, it just felt, and I felt myself saying, is this okay? A lot during while I was reading it. And also, just at a continuity point, so this is a story of Luke Cage when he's wearing the yellow shirt and the other tiara and the chain belt, the classic
look. 70s.
But he's not called Power Man. He's called Cage. But this when he wore this outfit, he was Power Man. So that was a bit weird. But I don't know.
I believe that this was put into motion a very long time ago.
Yes, I remember it being announced at least over a year ago.
Much longer. I think it was like a long time ago, because I know somebody used to work at Marvel and they said they were involved with it, and he hasn't been at Marvel for a long time.
Well, Aubrey?
Yeah.
Because he's listed in the credits.
Yeah, and
Aubrey Citizen is listed as an editor. Aubrey Citizen with Tom Brevoort as editor.
And he hasn't worked there in nearly a decade. So,
this is
10 years old story. There, you're saying
something like that,
and I just gotta wonder. I mean, like, this was great. I mean, this almost reminded me of a like an Infinite Kung Fu, or like a you know, like, it's very much blaxploitation, you know, kind of over the top, you know, that sort of thing. And it, like you said, Connor, it's well done. It just, the timing of it just seems very odd.
It does, because if you go into the shop, I like that show, what do you got? And this is it's the most obvious thing to hand to somebody, and I think that's not going to give you what you want. Yeah. Unless you really like that one. Anyway.
Now, I did like that one scene. I didn't expect to see Cyclops.
I know, I was going to say.
Old school Cyclops.
I got to that, and I was like, Cyclops. Well, Ron would have liked this.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. But the thing is that anybody who reads it has to understand that this is a retro romp, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, let's give people credit for it, and maybe they will understand.
It was good. It was good, though. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I thought it looked wonderful, and the story moved really well, and it was fun. But
yeah,
it's definitely not the tone from Power Man and Iron Fist. I can't say if you're a fan of Power Man and Iron Fist, you should get Cage.
Right. But
also,
if you're a fan of the TV show, should you get this? Or if you're a fan of Luke Cage for the past 10, 15 years.
Yeah. Also, he's called Power Man. The book is called Power Man and Iron Fist, but he's called Cage. But in this book, it's called Cage, but he's Power Man Iron. He's Power Man, but he's not called Power Man. It's very confusing.
You're really stuck on that.
You're really stuck on the Power Man thing. You really are.
It's just bizarre. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, not as bizarre. Yeah, his wife. The great writer Thomas Wolfe once wrote, "You can never go home again." And Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Gatiss are challenging that with the Jessica Jones number one, which came out this week, with the big old parental advisory on the cover, which I thought was funny. But, you know, the original team of Alias that created the character Jessica Jones, now nearly a year after her successful Netflix TV series, returns for a solo series.
Jab.
And I'm of two minds on this.
Oh, I'm right with you today.
Okay, good, great. Hopefully you're with me in 2 months. One is that that Gatiss and Bendis work great together. There's a great rhythm, and it's reminiscent of that feel of how Alias was. This character of Jessica Jones has evolved since Alias, and I feel like nobody told Brian Michael Bendis.
Well, he's the one who evolved her.
Whoa. Not in all...
He wrote her to Avengers different.
But then Pulse. Other people have taken her and written her and evolved it, and like the character is no longer just his, and he's writing this as if I feel like this is an older characterization of Jessica Jones that doesn't line up with what's been happening now.
All right.
And I'm kind of like, I kind of wish they didn't do this.
So I know
I don't agree with you
in the way that you, because I think he's aware of it, because the storyline, because for a while you're reading, you're like, when is this supposed to take place?
Right.
And then the reveal at the end of it's happened now, and here's that spoiler alert. So the last panel is Luke Cage. The whole time people are saying, where is she? Where is she? And she's just ignoring it because she's going back to doing whatever it was she was doing before Luke Cage came along, basically. And at the end, Luke Cage is standing there and he says, where is our baby? And so it's almost like she has gone back in time, but nobody else has. And I feel like that's the story.
Right.
And we don't know yet. So my two thoughts on it were that it doesn't feel like this needs to exist because it feels like we're going backwards. But at the same time, I was like, that's a pretty interesting story. Because I was really curious. I mean, that's what I was wondering the whole time. What is going on? But he did that on purpose, which is what that last page tells us. So he's playing with us, you know, in the good way.
Yeah, no, I believe that. I mean, but the thing is, like, even, and maybe just because it's Gatiss or because it's the tone of the book or what's going on, but this even feels different than Jessica written in the page of Spider-Man a couple of weeks ago with Miles.
Right, I think he knows that.
But we've also said that we didn't really like that version.
True.
And so this is the version that we love. Alias is one of the best books of the last 20 years. And yeah, it's weird. It's not quite as good because it is a bit more in the Marvel universe than the old book was.
Yeah.
It feels a bit lighter, but this is still the version we prefer. At least that's the last I checked.
I mean, I don't know. I don't feel any
kinship to Jessica Jones, which is what I'm saying, outside of in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
She was in a new Avengers book a lot, but once Bendis stopped writing that book, I don't think I've seen her at all, except for when she randomly pops up in other books, but on a regular basis. So I don't really have any affinity for her, whatever characterization is right now.
Yeah.
Also,
well, and that also ties into, would now maybe I'm coming around to what you're saying, because I feel as if once they had the baby, it really kind of stunted what, going back to what we're talking about with Superman, like what made Jessica Jones really interesting as a character. Yes. She just became this holding the baby, yelling at Luke to be careful.
Yes.
You know, so,
exactly.
Yeah.
I'm gonna read it.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think the most important thing you said was that they have a really great chemistry, Bendis and Gatiss.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. So then also we got Archie Meets Ramones number one. In the grand tradition of the Archies meeting celebrities.
Shouldn't it be the Ramones?
That's a good question. No, I think it's just Ramones. I don't think they're referred to as the Ramones. It's just the Ramones.
Mm.
Yeah. Hmm. But did you guys, am I the only one who read this just because
I
like
these?
Yeah,
no,
what
wait,
you think?
You know what? No, I didn't read it. I got it and I planned to read it because I was like, I got to get to that this week. And I just realized that in the onslaught of ones, I did not read it.
Oh man, you missed out because this is a ton of fun.
I was about to talk and I was like, why don't I remember anything about, I don't know. I didn't read it. That's why. Go ahead.
I mean, it was written by, it's co-written by Matt Rosenberg and Alex Segura, who we full disclosure, we are friends of ours, but of the people to write it, those two guys are some of the best positioned because they are both extremely passionate about music, and the history of music
and nerds.
Yeah. And so basically what happens is that the Archies are a band and they're in a battle of bands and they're doing awful and they're about to quit. And then Sabrina, the teenage witch, hands Archie a copy of the Ramones' first record. And that magically takes them back in time to 1976 to New York City, standing outside of Max's Kansas City, where they meet the Ramones. And they explain to the Ramones that they're in a band and they're no good. And then the Ramones are like, oh, well, we'll help you. Here's a list of things you need to do. And they send them on a wild goose chase through New York City, basically living out Ramon songs. And then the Archies go back to Ramon and said, we did all the things we told to do. And they're like, oh, that's funny, we were just messing with you, which I feel like is a very Ramones thing.
Yeah.
But they give them the lesson that was, don't play for anybody else, play for yourself and just have fun. And that's when they remember it. And then the Archies become a good band again. They come back to the present. They win the Battle of the Bands. All is good. And it's a great little Archie story.
And so. Downstrokes, constant downstrokes.
Yes.
Never an upstroke.
Yep. But I think the best moment of the book is that Archie is able to get his dad a signed first pressing of the first Ramones record from The Adventure, which is a nice thing to do for his dad.
Number one. So does this continue?
I guess so, because it was number one. So I guess
not necessarily. I mean, every one shot is listed as number one.
Oh yeah.
Usually, Archie Meets the Punisher wasn't an ongoing. You know, it was
good
just
point. All right.
Archie Meets Kiss was just a...
Oh, yeah. No, the back of the book says this exercise one-shot spectacular.
Yeah,
oh, well.
They're all just one-shots.
Yeah. Oh, well.
It's still number one, though. It counts.
Still number one. Okay, moving on.
So I'm very curious, Ron, what you think about Death of X, number one, which is the four-issue miniseries, which goes back in time to explain what happened to the X-Men and through their conflict with the Inhumans. This carries on the grand tradition of heroes fighting heroes. Written by Jeff Lemire and Charles Soule, who Jeff Lemire writes Extraordinary X-Men and Charles Soule writes The Inhumans. Drawn by Aaron Cooter.
Yep.
Let's talk about him before we get into...
Well, yeah, I was gonna say let's highlight the good, which I would say was Aaron Cooter.
I loved the art. I mean, we've talked about him a lot. He did a lot of Superman last year. But when Aaron Cooter first came on the scene, he was very much a Frank Quietly disciple.
Yep.
He did find his own style, but you can still see Quietly in there. Yep. And so I thought for this particular story, him drawing these characters, I thought it felt right. Like I'd be happy with him drawing an X-Men book.
And what's interesting is that I have to go back and look to see who colored his Superman work and his previous work. I don't love Maury Halliwell's coloring on this.
Right.
I feel like this is a case of kind of reminiscent of some of McKelvey's early Marvel work when they put a color on him that just kind of for McKelvey it ruined the book. I wouldn't say this ruined it, but there was a couple of points where the coloring and the highlighting gave definition and I feel like affected the art more than it should have. Yeah, well, among other things, you know, some cheekbones and some things like that, you know, where, you know, just a little weird kind of color choices. A lot with the Inhumans, like when they're using their powers and things like that. So I don't know. But
it's definitely Marvel style coloring, which is to overcolor. But I think the pencils are great and the inks are
great. They're fantastic. Story wise, and I'm trying real hard to be, you know, level headed. You know, fair and not just bleeding red X fan. And I'm a huge, huge Jeff Lemire fan. This is just lazy garbage. And I'll tell you why, because 20 years ago, 15 years, no, about 20 years ago, they had the legacy virus that was killing mutants and, who died? Madrox died. And it was just like, really? We're just going to go note for note and just instead of the legacy virus, plug in the Terrigen Mist? Like, that's all. It just felt, as a longtime X-Men reader, this just continued to fuel my discontent for what's going on now with all this Inhumans jamming in and the ridiculousness of the Terrigen Mist and basically repeating a storyline they did 20 years ago, you know, which I just think is, you know, and maybe Lemire and Soule don't know that. Maybe it's editorial leading them that direction or what, you know, and maybe they're just executing on like, listen, this is what needs to happen. And I don't know, but there was nothing in this that redeemed it more than as a longtime X-Men reader reading it and going, oh, this is just, they're just doing it again, just doing it again. And it definitely isn't, didn't provide any payoff or any sort of like, oh, okay, that may, that, you know, and I understand this is a mini series and we're going to see the whole story play out, but the displacement between the past, however many 6 months to a year of the X-Men world where we didn't know what was going to happen, and it's like, oh, this is what's happening, like, it just it just bothers me. So
it feels like a weird story to be telling.
Yeah,
I mean, we've already moved so far beyond it.
Yep.
At this point, we know that the Terrigen Mists were poisonous to the mutants has already been explained. It's already been shown in other books.
Yep.
So the big revelation here that the mists are poison is there's no punch to it because I knew that already.
Right.
And so I don't really – I think the only real mystery here is how does Cyclops die, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm going to read it because I like the creative team and I like the X-Men. We don't get to see – you know, other than the – you know, we don't get to see Cyclops anymore, so I'm going to read it.
I mean, if killing Cyclops is what takes getting rid of that awful X costume, then maybe it's a good thing. But
I like the mask as him as a bad guy. Now, obviously, you don't like him as a bad guy, so the mask. I mean, it.
Well, I don't think he's a bad guy. He's not a bad guy in this.
Well, the bad guy never thinks he's the bad guy, but he's.
Well, he's not a bad guy. He's not a bad guy. He's the greatest of them all.
I love.
He's
the greatest of them. Please do this for the next 5 minutes.
He's been the bad guy for like 5-6 years.
No, but... he's not the bad. No, he's not. The, he's not. No, he's not. He just had. He has a position. That's all. And you know, like if you ask me, Beast. All right, stop. I can't. You see, I go down too far. I go down too far.
No, please continue. Tell us about Beast.
Beast is nearly a supervillain, Kang level supervillain.
Kang level.
Yeah, he traveled through time and fucked with the timeline.
Right, and brought you your favorite X-Men book in the last 5 years.
But that's not saying much.
I did really enjoy the return of the Scott Emma Frost banter.
Yes. Yep.
I think they work really well together.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Whatever. I'll keep reading it, but it's more of hate reading. So, all right, let's move on.
Moonshine number one. Who read Moonshine number one? Brian Azzarello, Eduardo Risso.
I did.
I read Moonshine number one. So the creative team, Brian Azzarello, Edward Risso of 100 Bullets, along with, and we talked last week about the heralding of Karen Berger with Surgeon X. I think Will Dennis deserves a nod here, his return to editing comics.
Oh,
after
really?
Leaving.
Oh, that's, yeah. That's evident.
Yes. You think so?
Yeah. Well, in a great way. That's
a good way, right?
Yeah. We just talked on the Booksplode about the Batman Dark Knight. What was it called? A Dark Knight mystery. Yes, yeah. What was it called?
A Dark Knight true story.
The Paul Dini, a Dark Knight, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that was done by Eduardo Risso. Yep. And we were talking about how much we missed him, and we hadn't seen him around in a while. And lo and behold, 2 weeks later, or 3 weeks later, here comes an Eduardo Risso, Brian Azzarello crime story, which I thought this was fantastic.
Now, I remember this being solicited. Isn't there a supernatural twist that's supposed to happen that was sold
in the... Yes, that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. So I was reading this like, all right. And then and I was like, but wait, something's going to happen that makes me not like it.
Yep.
And so we haven't seen that here. So I thought, you know, I liked it a lot. I liked the tone. I liked what it was going for, but I'm mistrustful of it. Also, I have Azzarello. I always end up dropping off because I like that tone is really nice, but sometimes he doesn't get to the point.
Well, he's very much, I mean, he works great in trade, as we know.
Yeah.
Moonshine was pitched as a crossover of two genres. You got the gangsters in the Prohibition times mixed with a werewolf horror story.
There, I'm out. it's right there in the title, too. Moonshine, big moon. I get it. I see it now. Ugh.
Yep. But I love Risso.
But,
so,
all right. So, talking about what has happened and not what's going to happen, I thought this was a really great.
Yes.
Opening to a crime story about the Joe Mazzaria gang trying to get in on this great moonshine that's being made up in the woods.
Appalachia.
in Appalachia, and they send an emissary out there to make a deal, and he runs into the local culture. And I thought this was a really great issue.
Yeah.
Really great issue.
Me too. I thought it was a great start. We'll see how much I cringe when we get to the werewolves. And there's a little moment of the werewolves in the story, but it's all in the shadows.
Right.
You don't quite know exactly what happens unless you heard the pitch that we just told you. Sorry, spoiler.
Yeah, you could assume it was just dogs.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So as the story on the page, I thought it was really well done. Although Ron, correct me if I'm wrong here with the you're the mafia expert.
Yep.
I don't think they cared about the quality of their liquor.
I thought that was odd.
Yeah, I mean,
in fact, the more it was cut, the better, because they could sell more of it during.
Yeah, but I mean, but for the sake of the story,
that occurred to me briefly, and I was like, whatever.
Yeah,
it's the story.
But you know, but he's called Power Man.
Listen, he's wearing the outfit. He's wearing a tiara and a yellow shirt. Fine, you want to call the book Cage, but the characters in the book should call him Power Man.
All right, fair enough. All right, moving on. Did anybody read Champions number one?
Yes.
What do we think? Yay or nay?
It's fun.
I enjoyed it, but I don't like the Vision characters being in it.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that takes away from what they were doing over there, and to just have her be here, like everything's fine, was weird. Other than that, I liked it. It was like reading Young Avengers again.
This ties into this. So this is a new team book written by Mark Waid with art by Humberto Ramos, which, by the way, the flashback, the Ms. Marvel flashback pages were what they did with the coloring to make it. I love that.
Great art.
Great art. Ramos is amazing. But this is basically the next generation of heroes. You know, on the cover, you've got young Nova, Ms. Marvel, the daughter Vision, Miles Morales, young Cyclops, and you got Amadeus Cho, Hulk. And, you know, going back to what we were talking about Superman, this is attempting to take the younger characters and put them on a stage, which I think is really cool, because I think that uniquely each one of these characters are interesting on their own, and seeing how they interact together, nobody can do that better than Mark Waid. Although
and
I do
also go ahead.
I was going to say, I do think it's funny that the cover features all those characters and the inside cover highlights five of them, but they don't mention Cyclops, even though he's sitting right there, because he hasn't been introduced in the book yet. But I just thought that was funny. So.
I like the idea that the young heroes say, all right, this is dumb. All you older heroes are fucking everything up with your constant infighting.
Yes.
We're going to go off and we're going to quit our teams and go off on our own. I thought that was a conceit to start this story off. That was really great.
Yep.
It's we were talking about this before, that like the best Civil War II things are the ones where the characters are like, this is stupid.
Right.
Yep. Again. Yep. Like that's happening again. I also think just visually, I think we saw in Jessica Jones, we saw Ms. Marvel, Miles Morales and Nova fly by. They look cool together.
Yep.
It's a nice visual. And then when you have that with Amadeus Cho Hulk, I think that works really well at the same time. And even like if you take away the context of where the Viv character works with the Vision book, like she's got a part there that makes sense.
It's a good cohesion. It's
yes,
a good
it is.
It's a good mix of characters. Yeah, so I like it. I'm on board. So.
And when Cyclops joins, it'll be also interesting. I think this is a good mix of characters. And
yeah, he's a great hero. He's a great hero.
But also we see, you know, some future characters too, and there's a scene at the end where, you know, we see the Iron, what's her name? The new Iron Man.
Riri.
Riri and a young Wasp. I guess there's a new Wasp.
They shouldn't put too many people on this team.
Well, this is the next generation of Marvel. Whether you
is that
know,
a White Falcon? Who is that character? Is that White Falcon?
Yeah, it looks like a White Falcon.
They
I
should
remember
name
that
him that. Just as payback.
Who's the girl, fine.
You're gonna name him Black Panther. White Falcon.
who's the girl with the dinosaur?
Well, that's the Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur book.
I don't read that book. That's what I'm asking.
It's a good kids book.
Yeah, it's a kids book.
So maybe not all of them at once, maybe a rotating cast of young characters.
Not to go back to the well, but the White Falcon's costume looks very G.I. Joe reminiscent.
It does. He looks like sci-fi a little bit.
Yeah. So. All right, White Falcon.
Finally, Green Valley, number one, written by Max Landis with art by Giuseppe Camuncoli. And I fucking loved this.
It was good.
I really liked it a lot too. And just like with what was the Lake of Fire, I was like, all right, what's gonna be the supernatural twist? And it feels like there isn't gonna be one in this, and I was very happy about it.
Well, if there's someone who can sell a straight book like this, it would be Max Landis.
Yep.
Right? Yeah.
I mean,
He can pitch it. I say what you will about Max Landis and it's been whatever. He can pitch a concept. Like, yeah. He's really good at pitching.
But also, I mean, look, take put aside all of his antics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We loved American Alien, Superman American Alien last.
True.
Last.
Yep.
It was like three picks of the week out of that five-issue miniseries. And this issue was really, really good. It was medieval story about a group of super badass warriors who protect their town from barbarians, and they, you know, these four guys drive off 400 barbarians, and they have their celebratory feast, and the oldest warrior is going to retire with his hot young wife, and things go sideways. And I thought this was fantastic. The art was great.
Kevin Coley drew Hellblazer for years. That's how I know him most. He did Spider-Man after that, which seems like a weird thing. But I really like his range here. Like, you could tell it was the same guy who drew Hellblazer, but he was doing it in a completely different way. Uh-huh. And Jean-François Bellieu, who's normally coloring Scotty Young, colored this, and I thought did a great job as well with all that firelight.
Yep.
I thought it was really, really good.
Good stuff. Really impressed by it.
Yeah, really fun.
Yeah. Yep.
This is a great week.
Great week.
True.
Such a great week, in fact, that when it came down to our patrons to vote to pick a book for us to discuss, we had it was neck and neck amongst like six books, right?
Yeah, they were tied.
Yeah, it was Green Valley was in the mix. Shade the Changing Girl was in the mix.
Betty Boop, number one, was in the
Betty
mix.
Boop was in the mix. Yeah, we didn't get to talk about Betty Boop. Oh, geez. But Josh, what was the patron pick of the week?
Black, number one. Written by Kwanza Osiefo, art by Jamal Igle, art assist by Stephen Walker, and inking by Robin Riggs. This was kickstarted, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and it came out through Black Mask, I think is correct. It was okay. I thought it was kind of boring.
Here's the thing. I really like the cover. The cover was by Carrie Randolph, right?
Yes. Yeah. He just does covers though, and I like him a lot.
That cover is great. And then I open up the book, and it's illustrated by Jamal Igle, who we've known for years and are big fans of. And it's not black and white, but it's got tones, but it's not full color and that sort of thing. So immediately, like, the art for me, I have a disconnect between the cover and the interiors, just from a stylistic approach, right? Not neither good or bad. It just was like, okay, this is different. But then the story itself, felt really kind of middle of the road.
That's what I was getting. It was funny because when I was trying to think of something to say and I was stalling, it was that I couldn't remember anything about it.
Right. Well, the writer comes from editorial. He was, DC editor for a long time.
Yeah, well, he worked at Zuda for a long time.
Yeah.
I think, so considering the political climate right now, this could be a very powerful book. You know, the conceit, the pitch is that in this world, the only people with superpowers are black. And the image on the cover, the Carrie Randolph image, is a very powerful one considering what's been going on in the world. And so I was like, wow, this is going to be very interesting because, you know, this is the perfect climate for it.
And the cover is really striking with a character in a hoodie holding his hands up, and you got riot police behind him. Yeah. So.
And then you're right. Then it just sort of unfolded very, very middle of the roady. I think a more experienced writer would have handled this topic better.
I felt
like it wasn't explained very well. That if I didn't know the pitch, I wouldn't have understood what was happening in it.
Right.
You know, I thought, well, if people have superpowers, why does anyone know about it? That wasn't really explained. The big organization that shows, I don't know. I just felt like this wasn't as sharp politically as it should have been, considering. And it's also it's only a miniseries. It's not like it's an ongoing. So you don't have a lot of real estate.
Currently, right now from Image Comics, there's a book being published by Jimmy Robinson called Power Lines. Yeah. It's in the middle. It's like issue 3 or 4 right now. It's dealing with a somewhat similar concept. In the Bay Area, a black kid gets superpowers, and he is like he's being mistaken for a criminal, and so that's part of the story. And it's a much more interesting and relevant modern take on it.
Yeah.
I mean, in that way, like what Connor, what you were just talking about. When I'm reading Power Lines, it that is, I think, a lot more what you're talking about, what you were, I guess, hoping for in terms of tone. So if you've read this and feel that way or want to check that out, that's another kind of story that's dealing with race and superpowers and sort of that way. But this just was, you know, it was...
This is just, you know, teen gets powers and it happens to be because he's black. I mean, that's, you know, that's...
It's
that's,
new Superman. It's the same story.
Yeah, exactly.
But without the charm that is going on there.
And so, especially with it coming from Black Mask, which is a little more subversive and a little more, you know, kind of, you know, they're the people who put out the Occupy Wall Street anthology and all this sort of stuff. You know, I expected it to be a little more politically charged or politically
I thought it'd be more pointed.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted it to be. Yeah,
this is less political than Flintstones.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. So.
And now maybe I'm not, you know, I'm not black. Maybe I feel differently as a black reader. So that if it works, if it's working for people, then that's,
and it wasn't bad. I mean, it's great and it's good to see, you know, in terms of we've got representation and all stuff like that, those are things I want to support. And I wouldn't just want a book that's capitalizing on the, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement or any of those things like that. I wouldn't, I you know, so it's a delicate balance, but I feel like this had gotten a lot of hype and I read it. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's just this.
Well, it was sold as that thing that Connor was talking about, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
the iconography of the cover alone and the way that it was going to be more challenging. And maybe it will be.
Yeah.
You would think that this is a great way to examine what happens when the power dynamic is flipped.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that's what the cover sort of implies. You can see the kid, you know, the kid's surrounded by cops and he's got his hands up. But, you know, this sort of half smile shows he's not afraid anymore. You know what I mean? Like, the promise of the cover is something that the issue didn't deliver on. And I know we almost never talk about the cover, but the cover is so striking.
The cover's great. Yeah. So.
And just the idea of the pitch, I thought it'd be much more pointed than it was. But we'll see. As Josh said, it could still go that way. And we'll, you know.
And again, it was good. It was. We're not saying this was bad. I just expected a little more. Maybe that's a matter of managing expectations and all that sort of thing. So
anyway, if you wanted more of that, though, I would check out Power Lines from Jimmy Robinson. So it's currently being published too.
All right. So ratings. Ratings.
Ratings. For Black number one.
Connor.
Josh is the closer.
All right, Connor.
I give it a 3.
I give it a 3.5.
2.5.
Wow, okay. Sticking with it.
Yes, at least for the next one.
Yes, at least for the next one.
Yes, yeah, at least for the next one.
All right, there we go.
The reason why we're talking about that book is because people went to patreon.com/ifanboy and they gave some money. And now they can vote every week on a book to put in the show, and that's what they did. And thank you, patrons, who voted. And you can check out every Wednesday the voting goes live, and it goes live for about 24 hours. And you can vote on a book for us to talk about.
Yeah.
And any book you want from the shipping list.
And also, iFanboy patrons, the first wave of rewards went out in the mail. Our first patron should have gotten them by now. If you haven't gotten them yet, the international folks, just, you know, it should be coming. If you don't get something about a week or so, let us know. If you're a newer patron, you'll be in the next wave, which is coming out soon as well. But we're getting everybody who signs up for Patreon who gets a reward is getting it in the mail. So look to your mailman.
And this is all a way to help ifanboy.com. You go to ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can use our Amazon link to make your purchases. We get a little piece of that action and it helps keep the show going. And as we said, ifanboy.com/patron. Patreon is a link that gets you to patreon.com/ifanboy. It's all inverted. And you can help us out there. And there's lots of great rewards. As Ron just said, people got some prize packs, gave a certain level. And you can vote on the books. And there's all kinds of fun. We have our monthly hangout. All kinds of great stuff happens if you're a patron of the show. So we thank everyone who does that.
Yes. And that gets us to the point where we want to thank some patrons.
Yes.
Everyone who folks who become a patron on Patreon at a certain level get a thank you, and we bestow them with a superpower. Some say they're dumb. I think they're awesome. So, Connor, you're the first one up. Why don't you take it away?
We want to thank Michael Webb. And Michael Webb's power is a little sad, guys.
I mean, no.
Sometimes there's tragedy in superpowers. Much like Rogue cannot feel the touch of another human.
Yep.
Michael can see a mile away, but he can only see a mile away.
Ha, 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 ha,
that's
he's great as like a scout on top of like a, you know, a parapet in a castle. But
literally, that's it, though.
Literally, that's it. You could stand right in front of him, wave your hands. He wouldn't be able to see any of it.
Right.
It's very sad.
Wow.
Sorry, Michael.
Sorry, Michael.
All right. Well, our next patron that we want to thank is David B. Cooper, who at first glance you'd think he'd have the ability to jump out of a plane. But no, he doesn't.
Disappear to the night with money? No.
To disappear to the night, to look very good in a suit. Nope. That would be all too easy. David B. Cooper, he can speed read.
Like,
he can read a book in like...
speed reader?
No, but like a hyper-speed reader. He can read it.
Hyper-speed. That's different. Yes. Go ahead.
Hyper-speed reader. Any book length, he can read it in seconds. Almost like The Flash, but that's the only thing he can do fast is read.
Does he retain the information?
Yes, he does.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's interesting.
So he must have been really well with FAQs.
It's interesting that you said that. In fact, such that I was like, God, maybe I should change mine, but I don't want to. That I thought of just before you said that, which was Eddie Woodley. Perfect spelling. At all times. It's freakish. But he's never spelled a word wrong ever.
What about other languages? Just English?
I mean, he would have to try it. So I suspect, though, that even if he doesn't know the language, they'd be like, how do you spell Hing Hui Shai? And he'd be like, oh, it's like this.
That's how to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect spelling.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. You can spell that. No problem.
Well, I can spell that.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, that would be
even though it's not somewhat quite atrocious.
There's not, if you say loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I had to hit the tonic there. No, you went into a different part when I was, because I was afraid to speak when I was just a lad. Me mother gave me nose a tweak. Sorry, that's what Dick Van Dyke sounded like, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so perfect spelling, Eddie Woodley. So check the copy on this stuff.
Finally, Greg McCrowan. He has indestructible fingernails.
Do they stop growing, or how does?
Yeah, the thing is, they don't grow beyond normal length. They've stopped growing, but they're indestructible.
Wow, that's handy.
So, like, if he could stop a bullet, if they managed to only hit his fingernails.
So like Wonder Woman, but with the nails.
But the brace is much more area to work with, whereas the fingernails, you're looking with like a half-inch square space here.
But he's got 10 of them, so he could, what about toenails?
No, just the fingers. But also, I mean, like, he could put his fingertips together to create like a little 2-inch wall.
Yeah.
But if that bullet hits his knuckle, it's all over. The finger's coming off.
I imagine that there's times where you could hurt yourself like that.
Yes.
Like you're too aggressively scratching your scalp or something.
Oh, right.
Are they sharper than normal?
They're just indestructible.
Okay.
You know, they're not super strong.
It's not like he can claw through a wall.
I got to say, it's difficult to find a practical application for that. I'm racking my brain a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, these are, like you said, these are oftentimes curses instead of gifts.
Oftentimes it's not always flying around saving the day. Sometimes it's just...
Or jumping out of
a plane. Fingers. Yeah.
So if you would like a questionable power, go to patreon.com/iFanboy, sign up, become a patron today, and you get all the fun perks that we've already talked about. All right, well, we're running long, so we're going to skip emails this week. We'll get back to them next week, and we'll hear from you. If you want to email us, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com and tell us who you are, where you're from, how long you thought about it, and we always like to hear from you. Coming up, we've got some more podcasts on the way. Luke Cage, the Netflix series, has come out, and we are working our way through it, and when we get to a point where we can talk about it, we will. I was surprised to see Josh is in on it.
There's so many episodes. Why do they make so many episodes?
No, I agreed.
I get to the end of six. I'm like, all right, I'm feeling good. There's seven more.
Yeah, that'll be coming. And then also coming in November, is the next superhero movie, which is Doctor Strange from Marvel. And so we're going to be looking forward to that. And we're going to gather a crack team of podcasters to talk about that movie when it comes out. Unfortunately, that won't include Connor because he'll be away. So.
Sorry.
But it'll be good. It'll be a fun time. So be on the lookout for that, all at ifanboy.com.
So thanks to the patrons, as opposed to the freeloaders, you know who you are. I'm going to try guilt-based marketing. I think that's going to work really well. We are, because of the patrons, we have restarted Talksplode, Booksplode, as you probably know, because you've been listening to them. And everybody gets to listen, thanks to the patrons. This month, we are scheduled for another Talksplode, and I am not entirely comfortable telling you who it is quite yet, because I want to nail it down, but it's good.
It'll be good.
And it's quite relevant to this episode.
Cool.
Is it Stan Lee?
I mean, I think we plumbed that well.
I just thought we would have met Stan Lee by now.
We have. Just because he didn't remember us doesn't mean that you can't remember him.
True. Good point.
Head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show, talk about this week's books, find our other podcasts. Yes.
Did I elucidate that like Talksplode means it's our creator interview podcast? I feel like I don't explain that, but I should.
We just assume everyone knows that. Yeah, we should. Yeah. It's an interview with a comic creator or a notable personality. So yeah. Just leaving the door open just in case we can't get a creator.
This is Bill.
Josh talks to Ron.
That's literally what we do.
Head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show. You can find other podcasts we just mentioned. Josh did a Talksplode with Gabriel Harbin and Karina Becko a couple months ago. You can find our other special edition shows there as well. You can follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter. And individually, we are at Jay Flanagan, at CS Kilpatrick, and at Ron XO.
Yes. And if you enjoy this show, please let other people know. Go to iTunes or any other podcast platform that allows for reviews and leave a rating and a review. Let people know what you think of us, good or bad. And of course, tell your friends, tell your comic book store, tell anybody about it. Say, hey, listen, iFanboy is the best podcast. You should go check it out. Become a patron. All that fun stuff. Do that. So let's go wrap it up for this week's show. We want to thank everyone for listening to the Parade of Number Ones. And until next week, I'm Ron.
Well, before I say I'm Connor, I feel like we should mention one last thing, which is the source of many of our jokes is now over.
What do you mean?
I finally got a new iPad.
Whoa. Wow. You talk about burying the lead.
Yeah. No more hand cranks.
Wow. That explains the lack of noise behind you, yeah. I think.
Good news.
That's going to help. That's going to clear up your breathing right up.
Yeah. I can see better. My eyes water less.
All right.
And the most important thing is I can get to the books during the show, which is what was not always the case before.
You were paying that carbon tax too, so that's going to help.
Yeah. Also, I didn't know these comics had bright colors in them. it's interesting reading them without a haze of gray over everything.
The vertical scan lines probably aren't helping, and then the flickering, obviously.
I don't have to hit the side of it anymore to get the picture.
It's weird how it had an antenna and that would affect the picture.
Yeah, even the HD antenna only helped a little bit. It was all ordeal, but that's gone now. I've got a new one. There you go.
Congratulations.
No more thank you very much. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I know I want to be my wife and serve me the rest of your life. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.